Nonviolent resistance has been instrumental in establishing democracy in several countries around the world. Last Sunday, it was used to oust Georgia's President Eduard Shevardnadze. The Georgian opposition movement modeled its campaign after the October 2000 uprising that ousted Yugoslavia's President Slobodan Milosevic. Bringing Down a Dictator is the name of the documentary that chronicled the defeat of Milosevic. In the weeks leading up to last Sunday's protests in Georgia, the program was shown at least twice on independent television networks in the former Soviet Republic.
He has brought ethnic cleansing, concentration camps. He has brought unemployment, poverty, corruption, repression.
Peter Ackerman, the executive producer of Bringing Down a Dictator, says he's amazed at the influence the program had on the events in Georgia, but he warns it's not a blueprint for democracy.
Every one of these movements unfold in their unique way. What it is a illustration, a powerful illustration of an important point that authoritarians have much less power than we think they do, and that a series of nonviolent tactics linked strategically can undermine the power of an authoritarian to such an extent that he's forced to leave.
In Yugoslavia, Serbia, and Georgia, there were certainly similarities in that there was election tampering, which seemed to be the ultimate bad move on Eduard Shevardnadze's part in Georgia. So they had that going for them.
You're absolutely correct. But the most important factor was that they understood that the real target was not Shevardnadze. It was the loyalty of the military and the police. And once they could create hesitation on the part of the military and the police so they would not be implementors of Shevardnadze's repression, as soon as that loyalty faded, he couldn't stay. That's exactly what happened with Milosevic. And again, if I may, it's what happened in South Africa and in Poland and Chile.
But in Serbia, it was sheer numbers. The police were going to resist the few thousands that had gathered around the parliament building on the crucial day. But when they found out it was hundreds and hundreds of thousands from all over the country converging on the capital that day, they gave up.
I think they gave up not so much because they thought they'd be overwhelmed in a physical sense, but I think that there was, if you remember in the film, there's also a great deal of work done in 70 cities and villages around Serbia that laid the basis over the previous 10 months for the kind of hesitation that did occur that final day. But without that base being laid, the loyalty of the police would not have eroded as dramatically as it had.
Now, was that the case in Georgia, too? Were massive numbers of people converging on Tbilisi?
Well, it was, and I would say, too, that the groundwork was not as dramatically and carefully laid in Georgia as it was in Serbia, but I think that the Georgians did take more, it seems, and I wasn't there, so I got to be a little careful about, I am not an expert on what happened on Georgia, what happened, but it seems what happened is that they were following more the pattern of the climax of the Serbian revolution than what happened in the months that preceded.
In Serbia, it ended up being a very widespread people's movement. It began as a few college students and employed very Western ideas, where one, humor. They made certain you laughed, because ultimately the joke was Milosevic. That was their point. But they endeared themselves to people that way.
That's a very important point you're making, and it's a perceptive one on your part, because the laughter had a purpose. The laughter was there to break down the fear amongst the population of being terrorized. In Chile, a similar thing happened. It wasn't done with humor. Is that in the beginning efforts to resist Pinochet's regime, there was contemplated a strike at a Chilean copper mine. Now, that was a strike by people concentrated in a small area and easy for the military to deal with, so Pinochet threatened their lives. So they backed off that strategy, and then they decided one day in Santiago to walk at half speed and drive at half speed, and that night to flip open their windows and start banging on pots and pans. Now, that wasn't humor, but it was a way that individuals could express, without the fear of terror, reprisals and repression, their dissent. And everybody knew what that pot and pan banging meant, and that was done month after month after month, and it was designed to break down the fear.
And a reasonable fear, too.
Yes.
Well, I mean, the people in Serbia knew all about, you know, European culture and what was going on there. It's like, you know, Yugoslavia was 30, 40 years ago, and Georgia likewise now. So,
well, remember, this all started with Gandhi and the salt march in 1930-31, and he didn't evidently use humor, but what he did is he used salt. Salt was an equivalent because it was something basic to everybody, and the Brits foolishly taxed salt, so they had a tremendous target. So by basically everyone making salt and not paying the tax on it, you mobilized tens and tens of millions of people because they could all relate to that.
This is fine if you're overthrowing bad guys, maybe. How do you know that this won't be seen by people trying to overthrow a democratic government, a responsibly elected government?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I think it's the one that's extremely pertinent now, because the stories that we told before, which were stories of what happened late in the last century, you know, where we're talking about South Africa or Poland, Solidarity or Pinochet or Marcos, those were clearly gentlemen who needed to leave power. Now you have situations like in Belarus, Zimbabwe, perhaps Venezuela, and in Tbilisi, where you've had people who've been in power, but democratic processes have eroded. We have to be very careful to realize that an election is a necessary condition for democracy, but not a sufficient one. And there's many ways after an election you can erode democratic rights and freedoms. The rule of law can go by the wayside. And so many of these movements today are in response to democratic freedoms won, but now being taken away by the same people who were elected.
So is it instructional or is it provocative?
Well, ideas are provocative, aren't they? Maybe I could give you a little background in terms of really who should get credit here. This movie was created by Steve York. I had written a book called Strategic Nonviolent Conflict that was the basis of the first movie we did together that led to this movie that told similar stories about the one about Milosevic. So you can put an idea on paper and it doesn't inspire. Sometimes when you put an idea in a visual format and you do it well, like Steve obviously has, then you excite people's imaginations, and the idea becomes provocative because people relate to it and identify with it. So we have found that the visual arts have been much more powerful in talking about these ideas and speaking to people about these ideas than the written word has.
Peter Ackerman, executive producer of the documentary Bringing Down a Dictator.